Welcome to the Intentional Living Center today. Got your taxes all filed? If not, it was you're overdue. As some of you have, especially any of you who are accountants, bookkeepers, CPAs, tax preparers, you're happy that the 15th is behind us now. We're here in the studio of Intentional Living, picking up on a topic from a few weeks ago on disrespect. It seems like it's become a national pastime. And parents today and grandparents raising kids, trying to have a respect-based home, building respect, teaching respect in your home. When they leave the home, either through technology, when they connect outside the world, or when they go out into the world and connect with others and watch what's going on today, that's so disrespectful. So how do intentional parents really teach respect in a disrespectful world to kids that may be feeling pretty and acting pretty disrespectful is the question. And we talked to one of our callers, one of our listeners, who left a comment with us a few weeks ago, Deborah from New Mexico. And she really set the stage for a lot of comments we're going to get to today. People who want to talk about building respect in a disrespectful world and how to do that. But if you missed the program, here was Deborah's comment.
Hi, my comment is in regards to parenting. What do you do when your child is being disrespectful? I sometimes struggle with it because I don't want to be mean to my children. But when they're being disrespectful to me, I don't know what to do. I feel bad about it. I feel like I failed maybe because they're being that way. And it has to have stemmed from somewhere, meaning me or their parenting in general. And sometimes I feel like I'm being mean to them when I'm just merely trying to discipline them. And I don't sometimes know what to do. Sometimes my children look at me or act like if I'm being mean when I know I don't mean it in my heart. I'm not being mean to them. I don't have any anger inside of me towards them. I'm merely voicing my frustrations. And it's hard. It's hard as a parent. What do you do? What do you do? My kids are Christians. They're faithful. They're devout. And I know they understand right from wrong. So when they're being disrespectful, I feel like it's a mirror image of what they maybe see. And it stems from how I feel, and it's hard. So my question is, how do you deal with that? How do you balance that? Trying to be a parent, trying to be nice, trying to be disciplinary. That's my question.
Yeah, all right. Well, Deborah, you try too many things. You know, how do we be happy, and how do we, you know, jump up and down, and how do we love our kids, and how do we have fun, and how do we discipline? And you got to remember what your job is. Your job as a parent is to raise a responsible adult, to be in a loving, respectful home. And one of the greatest gifts I believe parents and grandparents we can give to our children, to the next generation, to future spouses, is to teach respect. You raise a disrespectful child, and I'm telling you that down the road, they're going to marry into someplace, into a life where if they think it's okay to be disrespectful because that's the way they were raised, the way they grew up, they're going to be disrespectful with you as well. And or in that marriage, which is going to be a problem. All right. You all wanted to comment on this. Let's go. We start with Carlin from Michigan. Carlin, welcome to Intentional Living.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. What's your comment on this?
I will comment from my own experience. In my home, disrespect became a pattern. It was a terrible pattern, and I felt like I was drowning, and it was a vicious cycle going back and forth between me and the children, and actually they were older at that time. And I had to diligently seek God and ask for help from the Holy Spirit, because sometimes just laying down rules doesn't work, because the problem is deeper than that.
Yeah. So, well, did you see that? Now, you said your kids, they had a pattern of being disrespectful to you?
Yes.
Did they learn it from someone? Did they see it in the home, disrespect?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's it. I was disrespectful to them also, and I think what happened in my situation was there was always, or many times, retaliation, anger in response to the disrespect. So what I needed to do was to try to rise above that and ask the Lord to turn the Titanic around.
Yeah, so they would be disrespectful, and then you'd get angry back at them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I really believe that happens a lot with parents, and we might have a tendency to misuse and abuse our authority as parents in retaliation to their disrespect.
Yeah, it happens. You know, Josh McDowell made the statement that rules without a relationship create rebellion, and that's true. You got to have a relationship with your kids, but we're the parents, and the only people who can change a system that's not working are people who have some power, and the power comes from the parents. In other words, we have the authority in the home, and the authority, like you're saying, Carlin, is say, I'm not going to respond, I'm not going to overreact. So let me ask you, what was the turning point for you in terms of making a difference in how you parented?
Like God works, it's always a mystery, and I can't say there was a turning point at one certain time. It's many times like He works, you might all of a sudden sit down one day and go, wow, things are different.
Yeah.
And when did that happen? I don't know exactly when it happened, but it did happen. And so I was just very diligent, just seeking God on the whole thing. And, of course, you know, you have times where you stumble and then times where you feel really strong. But our strength and wisdom comes from God. And to rise above that situation, we can only do it through Him.
Very, very true. All right. Thank you, Carlin. Appreciate it. We're talking about disrespect in the home with our kids or grandkids in a disrespectful world. A lot of disrespect online. Huge. I mean, if you go to places where you're communicating with people, it's not long before you see disrespect. Terrible. We see it on TV. We see it in a lot of the entertainment. We see it on the streets. We see it in Washington. So how in the world do we raise children to be respectful and loving and so on in a world where there's a lot of disrespect? We'll get to more calls in a moment. 888-888-1717.
You know, that box of electronics is a radio.
No, it's not.
No, I mean that stuff can connect you to stuff you really need.
Okay, totally confused.
For example, that tablet, put the Intentional Living app on there, boom. Works for smartphones too, or that mouse. Just use it to connect the computer or laptop to theintentionallife.com.
And Intentional Living has the stuff I need?
You can hear the programs again. Get connected, grow your faith.
Okay, I'll plug in the mouse again. You download the app on these five devices.
Here's the biblical definition of intentional love. Hi, I'm Dr. Randy Carlson with another Intentional Living Minute. To live the love passage of 1 Corinthians chapter 13 should be a high bar standard for us. It doesn't mean we're always going to reach it, but we certainly need to be intentional, stretching for it. What does Paul say? He says love is patient, kind, it's not jealous, it's not boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way, it's not irritable. It keeps no record of wrong. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, and it always is hopeful and endures through every circumstance. That's a great intentional decision every day. To practice one of those in your marriage, that's intentional living.
For more information and inspiration, go to theintentionallife.com.
By the way, that's the Intentional Minute. It's heard every day on the radio. It's also posted on Facebook every day. If you'd like to hear it again, or if you'd like to share it with someone that you know might enjoy and learn from it and be encouraged, just go to facebook.com/intentionalliving. And just like the page when you're there, and a new video will magically appear in your newsfeed every day, Monday through Friday. How that happens, I just don't know. So go to facebook.com/intentionalliving. You know, that the verse was 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that was in that Intentional Minute. And I sat down the other day and reread that chapter. You know, we read that over a lifetime many times. But I commented to my wife, Donna, after I read it. I said, you know, if we just practice what's in that chapter, the world would be a whole lot better place. 1 Corinthians 13. Very powerful. and appropriate for today as we're talking about teaching respect to our children in a disrespectful world. Okay, Umberto's on the line in Arizona. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. What's your take on this?
Yes, what I wanted to add or just comment is that we as parents, we have lost balance between having respect and trying to be cool with our kids because back in the day, we didn't have probably that friendship or being close to our parents to even try to say a joke with them because it was so disrespectful. And nowadays, we're letting our kids to do or say stuff to us, and we take it like a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But we are losing and the balance.
Yeah.
And our kids are trespassing those barriers.
Well, I agree with you. It is a balance. There's one, like anything in life, there's extremes. And one extreme, you can be very authoritarian. You can be in charge, and we don't talk in this house. You don't say things like that. And on the other extreme is anything goes, and we laugh at things and we're just trying to be best buddies with our son or daughter, which may be appropriate when they're adults. But if you don't raise a responsible adult, you may not want to be that friendly with them then. So when they're kids, especially when they're young, is the time we have to have that balance. And that's being an authority as we teach, or being an intentional parent. That's our term. Where intentionally every day, like you're saying, Umberto, is you're holding your kids accountable, you're loving, you're communicating, and so on. So are you a parent, Umberto?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so how are you parenting? How do you teach respect in your home?
I try to respect my kids because I think respect is not something that you just demand from people. It's something you earn and you learn. So I try to show respect with my kids. Try to talk to them with respect, something that probably my parents didn't do with me.
How old are your children?
She's 9, the oldest. Nine.
Mm-hmm. And it's so important for daddies to have that kind of communication and teaching their daughters about respect by respecting them. And today, boy, we got to teach our sons how to respect women. We got to teach our daughters how a respectful man should be treating them. And the role of a dad in the home is just critical. Okay, Umberto, thank you. Appreciate your call. Love to have you weigh in on it if you have a question or comment today. 888-888-1717. And we have Alicia in from New Mexico with a question for me. Go ahead.
My question would be, when you have a strong-willed child that is powering up, how do you not react when it's hours and hours on end and kind of an everyday thing? And so, like, little things that can be going great, and it's maybe 10 in the morning. And I ask her to please put her toys away. And then she has an instance where she's like, I'm not going to put my toys away, or I don't want to. To me, that's not just an easy battle, because then it's her being disrespectful and being disobedient. She's very much a perfectionist, and so she has to have everything right all the time, 24/7, and likes to be on a schedule and likes to know where we're going and what we're doing and when we're doing it and what time we need to leave at, type of thing. But I feel like she is testing the waters to find out how far she can go right now. And so, for instance, last night we told her that she needs to go to bed. She didn't want to go to bed. I told her, well, if you go to bed now, and in a little bit, I will go and tuck you in. And she was like, but I want you to tuck me in right now. And I'm like, I said in a little while that I would tuck you in. And from there, I didn't say anything else, because I have noticed that when I continue to say more words, it just makes her escalate more.
Yeah, you just said it. You said it. When I say more words, it just makes it worse. Boy, you know, intentional living, we talk about less words and more follow through. When we talk about parenting up and powering down, what that means is we power down by using less words, especially less words that are going to be critical or controlling, and we follow through in a healthy way. And you just said it. Your daughter has a need to feel like she's in control. Can I suggest something that might be practical, just really practical for you? Let her feel a little more of in control of the choices that are being made, but they're within the framework of you as a parent have set. In other words, you set the goalpost of where the corner markers are for what's acceptable, but giving her a little more control within those goalposts of what how she's going to do things. For instance, I think you said, it's time to go to bed now. Well, for a kid who is a high-control kid, that just, you know, all of a sudden, I got to go to bed right now. You know, why not 3 minutes from now? And it can set off a power struggle with your kids. And a wise parent that has a child that is very powerful and feels like they need to be in control would be to perhaps say, you know, little warning, we're going to bed in 10 minutes. So in 10 minutes from now, during these 10 minutes, you can continue to play. You can put the toys away, but when the bell rings in 10 minutes, it's over and we're going to bed. Okay? All right. In other words, you have a sense of direction. You're the parent. You've set the rules. You've set the direction, but you're allowing them to feel a little more in charge. Now, where parents go awry is at the end of the 10 minutes, then they get into a power battle because the kid is going to test you. This is not going to be taught overnight. You're going to have to follow through. So at the end of 10 minutes, if they start to battle with you now, say, you don't have to argue with them. You just maybe example might be picking up the toys that they didn't put away, which you asked them to put away. And when they want the toy the next day, they don't get it. Just say, hey, we're going to keep that away for a couple of days because last night when I asked you to pick that up and we agreed that you would, you didn't do it. So when I see you're being a little more responsible, we're happy to get that little toy back out for you. And you know what? This can happen with other kinds of toys now, electronic toys and the things for even bigger kids. That's not a right. All right? Your kid doesn't have a right to have a cell phone in the house. That's a reality. So learning to teach them responsibility is a key. All right. We'll be back with some more questions. 888-888-1717. Appreciate hearing from you.
This is Intentional Living with your host, Dr. Randy Carlson. Intentional Living is furnished by Parent Talk Incorporated and is made possible by the generous support of our listeners. This program is not a substitute for professional counseling, medical, financial, or legal advice. Intentional Living is not intended to be therapy by radio. We are Intentional Living, and we'll be right back.
Paul is saying, whatever you do, if you're mopping floors or if you're serving in a position of leadership in the country someplace, whatever you do, Paul says, do it with all of your heart. Isn't that interesting? And I was thinking about some of the terms that we use in life, like he's a wholehearted person. He's a half-hearted person. Have you heard that? Or my heart isn't in it. Well, I'll tell you what, if we get to a place where we say my heart isn't in it, that's a time to really stop and analyze what's going on. Because I guess it probably has less to do with the work than has more to do with about our heart. That's true. By the way, that's an excerpt from this month's teaching on CD, 6 Ways to Give Lasting Purpose to Your Work. And to all of our monthly members who've requested it, receive the Intentional Living monthly CDs, and you can join today. And if you request it, we'll send it to you as well. Just go to theintentionallife.com, theintentionallife.com, or call. And the phone number to call is 888-888-1717, and press number 4. It'll take you to our staff. Okay? I want to say greetings to some new members, by the way. Thank you, Randy, from Mesa, Arizona. Appreciate you joining as a member. Caleb from Santan Valley in Arizona. David and Nancy from Marshall, Michigan. Thank you. And Brian from Panama City, Florida. Heather from Stanley, New Mexico. Thank you. Some of the folks who've just recently said, hey, we want to be a part of this. Thank you for your faithful monthly support. If you'd like to know more about being a part of the ministry and supporting the ministry, go to theintentionallife.com. That's theintentionallife.com. Click on donate. Some more questions. Let's go to Gina in Michigan. How can I help you today, Gina?
Well, I have 2 children. My oldest, she's 9, and then my youngest, she's 4. And she is one where everything has to be perfect and planned, and she's not very adaptable. She has a very hard time when things change. My 4-year-old is very strong-willed as well, but he's on the opposite scale, whereas he grasps at any change that comes and revels in it. And so they're constantly battling each other, and I can never get them to stop arguing, but then they're also really close, so they never like to be apart either.
Which you wish they would more often, right?
Oh, well, at the same time, I don't, because I lost my brother 4 years ago, and him and I were best friends, and I think that's one of the reasons that they do cling on to each other so much is because they saw what I went through losing mine, so...
I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah, but...
Well, what I hear is that you obviously you're a good mom and doing a good job and want to raise your kids to be responsible and get along with each other. But if I hear you mostly, you're mostly concerned that it sounds like your oldest, your 9-year-old, has to be perfect to be okay.
Yes, and that's really hard. I've been trying to figure out how to teach her to kind of let things go and not worry so much about everything.
Can mom do that?
No.
You know where I'm going, don't you, Gina?
I need to
okay.
Work on. Yes. I need to work on it for her to be able to work on it.
Yeah. Well, we do. You know, I think firstborns, there's been enough research, like your 9-year-old daughter, Gina, that want to be perfect. And many of you don't have to necessarily always be a firstborn, but tends to be more the firstborn sons or daughters that can have that kind of tendency. Or sometimes only children growing up where there's a lot of, you know, expectation of getting things done. I think by the time they get to those of us who are babies in the family, the parents are so tired. They're just happy to get you through the day, you know? And so the pressure can be off for those of us who are babies in the family. But when I look, even my oldest brother, you know, my mom and dad, they're both in heaven now, but if they were here, my mom used to say, oh man, we were so hard on your brother Warren and our expectations were so high. We put him under a lot of pressure. Well, see, I didn't feel that when I came along nearly 11 years later as the baby of the family with another brother, my brother Larry in the middle. Didn't feel nearly that kind of pressure that my parents had as young parents, putting pressure on the firstborn. It tends to be part of the pattern. So lighten up. Kids learn from us. And so if you're raising a perfectionist, just kind of throttle it back. Don't celebrate their perfection. It's easy to celebrate the output instead of the process. Did you get that? In other words, we put the emphasis on the A's, the stars, you know, that a boys for being the winner. And firstborns really gravitate to that many times. Where putting the emphasis on the process, I can see you're working hard on that. I can see that you're really putting a lot of effort. I can see that's really important to you. Where you're putting it back and on them and in their lap and not something that you're projecting onto them that they have to do to be accepted. It's subtle, but it's important. So be intentional. Make sure you're putting the emphasis as much on the process and the effort and the as you are the output. Okay, we got time. Let's get Liz on the line with a question from Michigan. Go ahead.
We have 7 kids, 2 of which are biological and the rest have come through us through foster care and things like that. But the question today is about my 2 6-year-old boys and my 2 8-year-old boys. The 4 of them are thick as thieves as well as each other's worst enemies, it seems sometimes. And it seems like all of their play goes from boy roughhousing to extreme measures of violence and vengeance in about 5 seconds. And I struggle with not wanting them to not be boys because boys wrestle and boys roughhouse, but you know, I also want them to have compassion for each other. And so I just, at what line do I draw it at? And do I just cut it out completely? You're not allowed to touch each other, or do I just let them work it out amongst themselves? Or, you know, where's the balance in that?
Well, there's rough and tumble, and then there's behavior that can frankly become abusive, and we can't tolerate that. How long have they all been together? 2 sixes and 2 eights. How long have all those boys been together?
Well, the 1 6 and 8-year-old have been together since, obviously, the 6-year-old was born, and then it was a year in January for the second 6-year-old, and then the second 8-year-old came last July.
So 2 of them are related brothers.
Yes, actually, so my 6 and 8-year-old are my bio siblings, are my bio children, and then the 6 and 8-year-old foster brothers are actual brothers as well.
And so they've been there for a while.
Yeah.
Are they there for long term?
Yes, unfortunately, it's not looking like mom is going to be able to get them back, and so in that case, we will adopt.
Well, let me just say this, Liz. God bless you for stepping in giving that kind of love and attention and care for these boys. But when you say you got two six-year-old boys, two eight-year-old boys, think about it. Your son, who is six, now has two older brothers. Didn't ask for that. Two eight-year-old brothers. And your eight-year-old son now, and the other one now has, they have two six-year-old younger siblings. And the fact that they're all so close to each other, same age and then just 2 years apart, man, you're almost one shy of a basketball team here. And so there's going to be a lot of competition. They're at the same stages developmentally, going through some a lot of the same issues, and it's going to create the potential for some of the things you're seeing, not to mention whatever those boys brought into your home from where they came from, the stress and the loss and all of that, and you know that. They're going to bring it in. And as we know as parents, kids don't typically know how to express their emotions as well as acting out their emotions. And they tend to act out whatever they can't express. It's hard for them to know what they feel, so they act it out. So being perceptive of the acting out is just a sign or a symptom of something going on. But to set the tone, hey, well, listen, we don't treat each other that way in this home. There's going to be discipline. And you discipline each. You, even if one's 20% to blame and the other's 80% to blame, they're going to both go to their own room. They're going to be disciplined, time out, privileges taken away, or whatever it's going to be to hold them accountable. And especially having, listen, you said seven kids. These are just four. You got three more. Running a routine, being very predictable. With seven kids, what you're facing every day, staying in the same kind of routine is going to be really important, holding them accountable. But again, we can't tolerate disagreements exploding into hitting each other, hurting each other, and that kind of thing. Just can't happen. All right. I hear the music says out of here, Randy. Time to wrap it up. Thank you for joining us here at the Intentional Living Center today. If you missed any part of the program or want to hear it again on demand at our website, just go to theintentionallife.com. To hear today's program or any of our archive programs, they're there for you on demand. Say thanks to Rob. Thank you, Rob, our senior producer, and to Stephen for screening the calls today, and to Sally, and also to all of you who faithfully pray for, and many of you who just very sacrificially support the ministry. We appreciate it. I'm Randy Carlson. Have a good day. We'll see you next time from the Intentional Living Center.